Professors FM.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Fanalytics Podcast. Mike Lewis, Doug Battle, brought to you by the Emory Marketing Analytics Center. Doug, today's theme, if there is one, because I'm putting some stuff together, is like the idea of how league organization, how a sports organization is structured, how that affects fandom. And this is coming from a couple of places in terms of sort of looking at what's happening in the world of sports. Okay, Doug, so let me just ask you a quick question, and then I'll start to go back down this path. What sport, not what league or what organization, what sport is most mismanaged in terms of American sports fandom?
I'm going to say Major League Baseball.
Okay, so baseball?
Yeah, it's just iconic brands that are becoming irrelevant to the everyday American.
Okay. I'm going to say fighting. And it's sort of this broad category of sports where, and I'll get to why I'm saying that in a second. But so if I look at the way fighting is organized, I think that has a terrible consequences for how popular the Sparta, the combat sports, boxing, MMA, all novelty boxing, how popular these things are in the U.S. The other one I want to talk about is, what was it, JMU and Liberty University. I think Liberty is still undefeated in college football. But Liberty is not going to, I wrote it down. What, do you know what division is Liberty in? JMU's in the Sun Belt and Liberty is in Conference USA.
Yeah, so they're D1.
Yeah.
We had this kid in high school that was hell-bent on being a D1 athlete. And he kind of identified from the time he was like in sixth grade, like, I'm going to be D1. And everyone called him D1 and he ended up playing at Liberty. So that's how I know Liberty is a D1 football school.
But, and we can, when we talk college football, we can get into this. But the JMU lost over the weekend. Liberty is still undefeated, but Liberty's not going to the college football playoff. I mean, there's no scenario where they get there. And right. So, again, the way these things are structured has implications for how fandom flourishes or doesn't flourish. Okay, but so back to fighting, combat sports. So I was thinking about this, and you can say I'm sort of off the rails on some of this. The Paul brothers did significant pay-per-view buys. Tyson Fury fought an MMA fighter, and I don't know if it was it was exhibition or if it was sanctioned. Again, big numbers, decent numbers. We had a senator, and this is actually what got me going down the path. We had a senator that essentially went viral. Mark Wayne Mullins, or Mullen, from Oklahoma, asking a Teamster boss to stand up. The infamous quote of, you said anytime, any place, this is a time, this is a place, stand your butt up, right? And again, people love this stuff in a way, but boxing has become absolutely fringe. MMA, the UFC, maybe they've got a decent following, but it's not mainstream. I don't think, absent Ronda Rousey or Conor McGregor, I don't think the average sports fan is going to be able to name more than maybe it's like baseball, maybe any top UFC athletes at the moment. So I don't know. I don't know how much of I don't know how much interest or background you have in combat sports, but people are fascinated by fighting. And there is essentially nothing happening with maybe a little bit of a nod to UFC.
Yeah, people are fascinated by fighting when you go to a hockey game or a football game and a scuffle starts to break out and everyone lights up like, okay, here comes the fun part. And so there is this instinctual desire among sports fans to see that conflict expressed in its purest form of hand-to-hand combat. And fighting has always been the sport where groups of people come together and they have their guy that they put money on or their guy that they root for. And they watch it go down on a national stage or on an international stage. And it has seemed to become more fractured, as has a lot of sports has become. I mean, a lot of media has become more fractured. We've talked about this a million times. There's far less universally appealing products, universally appealing films or television shows or sports in this case. And to the point where the Super Bowl feels like the only thing. And a sport like boxing, for whatever reason, it seems like even more fragmented from mainstream culture than say like NBA basketball, which still it might just be doing 10 million views on a NBA playoff or NBA finals game, whatever. But it's still, there's a lot of household names. Boxing, MMA, much more of a niche audience.
And the reality is, I think if you went back in time 75 years or 100 years, the biggest American sports were baseball, boxing, and horse racing. Right? And they've all essentially faded or are in the process of, and I, again, I'm rooting for baseball, but they seem to be in the process of fading to second tier status. And so we come back to this issue of why is this? Why is there no organization, no boxing league that can make a legitimate type of competition where fans can track a young Mike Tyson or Muhammad Ali or some of the Sugar Ray Leonard? And again, it's interesting, the names I'm going back to are from the 80s and the 90s, and generate some of this massive, massive fan following. It just doesn't happen. But heavyweight boxers were always the biggest sports stars in the world.
Yeah, it's kind of a chicken and egg situation in my mind in terms of the talent. Like, part of me is like, maybe there's less interest because we don't have Holyfield or, yeah, we don't have those iconic brands. And again, chicken or egg, it's like, did the top talent stop going to boxing? Did they start leaning toward football and basketball as those sports started paying more and more and drawing more attention and being more interesting to kids? Or vice versa, did those sports become less interesting to kids and pay less money because they had less stars and less ability to build stardom around the athletes? And so I think of a guy like Elijah Holyfield, Evander Holyfield's son, played football at Georgia. Who's to say if in an alternate universe where boxing is still king, he's not this featured boxer that people follow like LeBron James from the time he's in high school till now and are clamoring to see him and a household name across the country? But it's like, in my eyes, a kid like that sees the potential earnings in the NFL and the glamour and glory of being a star college athlete and is just more interested in that. So that's one angle of it that interests me. Is there actually less talent than there was? If so, why? If not, why is the talent now not marketed and built into stars in the way that it was 30 years ago?
I think there used to be a system. And again, the system was probably the kids came up boxing in things called the Golden Gloves tournaments. And so some of that may have, and again, it definitely has faded. The question is, why did it fade? They come up in Golden Gloves, participate in the Olympics, win a gold medal for the US of A, and then turn pro, right? So there was a structure in place, like NCAA basketball, right? A structure in place where the stardom and the brands were built. And then the moment you become pro, you've actually got some market power. Now, you're probably trying to get in with a promoter and then you become a cog in that machine. And so then you lose that ability to build that brand and have any leverage. Elijah Holyfield? That's an interesting example, right? Because you could say he sees more glamour and potential in football, but he would have been a heavyweight fighter, right? I mean, assuming he's a 220-pound, 230-pound guy?
Yeah.
Okay. Being the baddest man on the planet, a la Mike Tyson, means that you are one of the biggest stars on the planet, right? Especially if you have a personality and a look and you sort of capture the public's imagination.
I think it did, but like who are the top heavyweight boxers right now?
Okay. And so then again, I think this is where the question gets interesting, right? It's like, why does the promotion not work? Why did they lose the ability to, I mean, it's Tyson Fury, right? Damaging himself with this split decision over Nagano. But I guess what I come back to is, if a young Mike Tyson appeared on the scene, I think that kid is the biggest star and one of the top five biggest stars in the world of sports internationally. Very quickly.
In today's climate,
a guy that's sort of walking across the ring and blowing people up, this happens three or four times against legit competition, suddenly, and again, it kind of goes back. We want to see the Senators fight. We want to see the hockey players fight. We want to see the fan running up to the LSU or Mississippi State player on the field, get it handed to them. We want to.
We do. It is something. I think it's part of why football works so well. I think there's this innate desire amongst sports fans
gladiatorial for sports.
Yeah, this kind of like violent nature in humans, and yet something like football, where it's a little bit controlled and a little bit civil. There's rules, and there's, we don't feel like complete savages watching it. I think it bodes well for the sport. But yeah, I do think, I don't know, Mike, what's your opinion on boxing? Like, at some point something changed. It went from being one of the top dogs to very secondary in the minds of sports fans. Is it the media coverage, the talent, the league structure, the league approaches?
I think it's mismanagement. And okay, again, because I think the way it evolved, where there was no sort of the global federation, right? It was essentially, I was fighting in this guy's promotion or that Golden Boy promotion or whatever the promotions are, that there's no incentive for people to sort of build towards what the fans want to see. I mean, Mayweather-Pacquiao might have been the last one of those things where it's like, oh, these two stars coming together, which is what people want now. And so I blame it on the individual promoters and their inability to sort of think globally or cooperate globally rather than just within their little silos.
Let me ask you about pay-per-view. In boxing's heyday, was the structure similar?
No, I mean, these were all sold independently. I mean, again, okay, I think some of this is kind of fuzzy, right? But it's like, oh, Tyson's fighting, order the pay-per-view via your cable company, and let's say it's $39.95 for the event. Maybe it's only going to last 35 seconds. Now it seems like everything flows through, I don't know, Showtime or this ESPN product. I forget what it's called. Essentially, they're controlling all of the pay-per-views. But and maybe that's the issue, right? You got to develop the stars. You can't just go straight to the pay-per-view.
Right.
Right. And there is no structure for developing those stars. American men don't win gold medals in the Olympics anymore, right? They're not out there. They're not out there. There is no Sugar Ray Leonard sort of winning an Olympic gold medal, being on a Wheaties box and then going pro. That doesn't exist. And why? Because, I don't know, short-sighted people started digging. I mean, in some ways, it's similar to what's going on with NCAA basketball, right? The NBA has almost done some things to shut off the college game.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'm still curious from a talent standpoint if it's similar to basketball in the sense of, I don't think that professional basketball, like American basketball, is any less talented than it was 30 years ago, 40 years ago, give or take. But clearly the world has caught up and is evolving and is even pushing basketball forward in a way. And I'm curious with boxing, if American boxing has truly fallen off from its standard, or if simply the rest of the world's gotten better relative to the rest of the world. It looks less dominant and it's harder to build stardom when your guys are losing in the Olympics and then to feel like, hey, this is as good as it gets. It feels more like a minor league. It feels more like American soccer in that regard. And so I wonder how much the world adoption, growth, development is negatively impacting the U.S. market.
Part of what, I mean, and going back to your Holyfield point, I think part of it is just the growth. Maybe not even that the world has gotten better, but America has gotten worse because everything flows to the NFL now. Yeah. I mean, don't you think that in some ways, American track and field might be worse because in a previous era,
Tyreek Hill
might have been running track off season. Now he's just playing football year round. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's a big part of the story, that everything flows through the NFL, because that's where the, and again, it, it, all these kind of chicken and egg things, right? That's where the excitement is. Do you want to play in the NFL in front of 100 million people, or you want to play Major League Baseball? And it's kind of great, right, Doug? Because the answer should always be, and what was it? Kyler Murray, right?
Yeah.
Take out of baseball or play football. Baseball, you play 25 years, you don't get hit, right? I mean, it's.
I've seen so many quarterbacks. Mahomes is another one. There's so many guys in the NFL, even in college football. I think I was watching Oregon State this week. I think DJ Uiagalelei had a chance to play baseball. I could be totally off there, but if my memory serves me correctly, which it might not be, I know they were talking this week. Carson Beck for Georgia had some offers in the SEC to play baseball, opted to be a quarterback. There's guys who have turned down professional baseball, guys who have been drafted and decided to play college football instead. And so I do think
Carson Beck in front of 95,000 people.
Right.
Instead of what, 500 people at a Georgia baseball game?
Yeah. And, or Florida or Alabama, wherever he was being recruited. But it seems like football's dominance might be having a negative impact on just about everything else. With the exception, I feel like I feel like there are guys that are stars in basketball that would also be stars in football. But I don't know that many football stars that I think, oh, this guy would be all pro in the NBA. I remember they talked about AJ Green. They talked about, there's been a number of guys that were obviously athletically capable, but it's such a skill, finesse sport that it's difficult to see Myles Garrett translating to being some star in the NBA, or even Justin Jefferson. Or Joe Burrow, who's got a great three-point shot, by the way.
Travis Hunter, right.
There you go. I mean, he seems like translates to just about anything.
That seems like the kind of guy that might translate. I mean, it's almost like you wonder if those two sports end up being kind of nicely separated because of the height effect, right?
The height. Like I said, the kind of nuance of playing quarterback in football or playing defensive back in football and basketball, of course, ball handling, there's just completely different skill sets that might. For example, I watched Nick Chubb play basketball at the rec center at Georgia. Strong as an ox, super competitive guy, not an NBA basketball player, not even a college basketball player. Best running back in the NFL, not a college basketball player, simply because of shooting, dribbling, quite a good rebounder, I will say. Great vertical jump, very strong guy. But beyond that, there's such differences in those games that a guy like Nick Chubb, who can be a superstar in the NFL, could also struggle at the college level in basketball.
Well, let's go back to the classic two-sport athletes, Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders.
Baseball.
Are those guys still playing? Are they still playing baseball? If they're coming up in 2023, or is the football coach kind of saying, we got off-season conditioning, we got spring football, right?
I mean, Deion's too busy with his social media in 2023. 23-year-old Deion Sanders, he's got two careers. It's professional football and influencer.
Yeah, okay, so again, do you see my point that I feel like there's such love of it? Like the other story that caught my eye and sort of took me down this path was they're actually planning a crossover MMA tournament featuring the guys that have dominated the World's Strongest Man competition fighting in MMA.
Okay. Just to bring some star power into the mix.
And again, I mean, sort of very kind of strange star power, but just to bring some brands into it. And again, just this strange fascination, right? We like to see fighting. We like to see novelty fighting. We want to see senators fight strongmen potentially. We want to see YouTubers fight basketball players. None of it really makes any sense.
We want to see Zuckerberg and Elon Musk.
We exactly right.
How much does the fighting between Logan Paul and the amount of attention, how much does that devalue the sport in the minds of the general public, where they feel like, oh, anybody could just go be a professional boxer and put on some weight and take a couple classes and be on a pay-per-view making more money than the rest of them?
Don't you think it does?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's got to. I think you watch like a celebrity basketball game in the NBA, like the All-Star weekend celebrity game. It's terrible every year. Yeah, there's always one guy that does okay, like Quavo, Justin Bieber. There's always one guy that does okay, but they largely look like amateurs, and they don't physically look the part. They don't, their percentages are lower. When you watch Logan Paul, as much as you and I have discussed, like, this guy's not a pro fighter, it's kind of a joke. Looks the part, puts on the show in the same way. Pretty much overnight, guy went from YouTuber to looking like, oh, wait, is he actually legit?
Hold on, I do have to tell you something. Logan Paul has officially retired from boxing. Logan Paul says he's now only going to wrestle in the WWE.
I think that's a good move for him.
I believe Jake Paul is still competing.
Okay. So they're the same person to me, because I don't I couldn't tell you the difference between which one's older, who's done what, who dated who. Like, I don't know the Paul brothers, but the fact that he overnight pretty much became the biggest star from a marketing perspective in the sport is a little bit.
I suspect that no one has sold as many pay-per-view buys as the Paul brothers over the last 2 years. Right. I mean, that's bizarre. Right. But it's like if
the most viewed NBA game were the celebrity All-Star game, like a game that's pretty much a joke. And just because of the star, just because Quavo's playing and people are like, oh, I like Quavo, I'll tune into that. Or it'll be funny to see if Quavo gets dunked on or if Justin Bieber gets crossed over. That's how I feel about boxing, with the amount of attention that those guys have drawn has devalued the sport. It's made it into a show.
Let me tell you something else. Tell me your reaction. Okay, so Half-Thor, like the guy that was the mountain in Game of Thrones, you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I pronounce his last name, Icelandic guy. He was the world's strongest man. I think he won 4 titles. He fought Eddie Hall, who won the 2017 title. Yeah, I know more about this than I probably should. In Dubai, I think about a year ago, and I don't think the fight did great, but it has something like over 30 million or 40 million YouTube views. So again, I think you're right. This stuff completely devalues the sport, but it attracts eyeballs, right? And so there's potential there for someone that can figure out how to do this and sort of have the patience to build the brands and have the legit competition.
I've seen this meme go around about baseball saying baseball would be more interesting if instead of having the president or a celebrity throw the first pitch, they had to throw the last pitch. So you get George Bush, you put W out there, bases loaded, full count, one run game, ninth, bottom of the ninth. That would make it more interesting. It would draw more eyeballs to the sport. Everyone would tune in to watch that. But again, it would devalue the sport. It would make it feel like, oh, this is a joke. Like, the only reason people are watching is because of this gimmick. And that's how boxing has felt in the last 5 years to me. It's putting George W. Bush out for the final pitch. And it does draw a lot of eyeballs, but at what cost? At what cost to the game? And at what cost to the core fandom? To the people that love the sport? And to them, you might be making a mockery of, and these are the people that you need, the people that are truly engaged, the people that are inviting people to come in with them and follow this at a high level. And so that's just one parallel that I see to the Logan Paul, Jake Paul. There was that kind of Champions League of old 60-year-old boxers. Oh, I mean, boxing's gone through its share of gimmicks in the last 5 years.
Mike Tyson's Legends Only League, which I believe was a one-and-done concept, but I think it did decent pay-per-view numbers.
Right, right.
So, I mean, bottom line, I think how you stated it is pretty well said, that maybe what it is the way boxing being basically unorganized into a bunch of fiefdoms essentially left it open for the novelty acts to come in, and that degraded the whole thing, right? I mean, you couldn't – Major League Baseball might be struggling. The NBA was not the NFL. But you couldn't form a, and we see this all the time, Doug, you couldn't form a novelty basketball league, right, that had YouTubers playing stand-up comedians or and sell out arenas, right? That
well, we've had like, I remember the TV show Pros versus Joes, and it was like Jerry Rice playing football against like your next door neighbor. And basketball, even they have their kind of their 3-on-3 league where it's like Joe Johnson and a couple
the trampolines or something.
Yeah, trampoline basketball is another thing. Like, we've seen sports have their gimmicky. With golf, you have like, you can watch Steph Curry play Patrick Mahomes in the summer every year. Or some, there's all these events. You can watch Nick Saban and Kirby Smart duke it out on the links. Like, there's so many gimmicky, like, auxiliary pieces to these sports, but they feel auxiliary when you start, when you market it as if that is the peak of that sport. This is the Super Bowl for that sport. Logan Paul versus whoever, KSI, whatever, these YouTubers and influencers. That's where I think you cross the line into devaluing the sport.
I guess the parallel might be that if the NBA, if let's say the Lakers decided they were going to form their own sort of branch off league, right? And they were just going to include the Spurs, the Clippers, and the I don't know, some team, the new Seattle Sonics or something, and they won it all the time, and the NBA splinters into four or five different leagues with four or five different championships, then you open up the floodgates to all sorts of nonsense, and you see the whole thing kind of cascade down. So in some ways, the only interesting question is, can you fix it? Who knows?
How would you fix it is my question.
Money.
What's the first thing you would do?
Money. You get the Saudis to put billions into it, and you create essentially a legitimate international boxing league where you've got sort of lower level and sort of a multi-structured league where you've got lower level divisions where it's a legit competition in terms of people working their way up. But I think it takes Saudi money, and it takes that international approach. And then, frankly, on top of it, Doug, you got to figure out a way to let the Americans win sometimes, because that's where the star power is. You got to have a Chinese guy win the middleweight, probably.
I was going to ask, how do you build the stars? How do you build the Pacquiao, the Mayweather, and of course, going back to the iconic boxers, George Foreman. How do you build the next George Foreman?
And look, maybe you're smart about it, and you provide an incentive for people going through the Olympic system, right? That we're going to sign a contract with any Olympic gold medalist that essentially pays them for that time and that brand being built. So I think you almost have to view it as sort of big picture, but then get the details right as well.
Yeah, gotcha. Well,
okay.
I'm hoping they do like a professors league. I want to see Mike Lewis go up again. I think that the students, I think that's a niche that hasn't been tapped into yet.
I'll sort of leave that one there, but I would happily participate in such an endeavor. Okay. The other story. Okay. Probably shouldn't touch this one because they told me I shouldn't touch this one because it's none of my business.
Now but it sounds like,
well, Angel Reese has been suspended. Maybe she's back by the time this airs, from the LSU basketball team. And there's sort of social media back and forth between past players, mothers of past players. And the illusion seems to be that Angel has not been hitting the books and has been suspended from playing for a little bit. And all I could think again was, okay, you organize your league in a way where people are suddenly making big money, NIL money, selling false eyelashes kind of money. And can you then tell me, Doug's just shaking his head, can you then tell me that as a fan, it's none of my business? And it's tough, right? College kid should have a right to the privacy, start taking millions of dollars, you want to be a megastar, then suddenly I don't know that it's none of my business because you've asked me to be a fan. You've gotten rich. There's that relationship. Relationships have got to be two-way streets. And again, it kind of comes back to this thing of the danger of college kids essentially becoming professional athletes is that the shield has got to disappear, doesn't it, Doug?
It does. And I think it's interesting you use the phrase none of my business. For some people, it literally is their business. Anyone who's bought a product because of Angel Reese or watched a video because of Angel Reese or contributed to LSU's NIL because of Angel Reese and the run their team went on last year literally is their business. Like, it is a business now. And it, to those people, you can't say it's none of your business. You're essentially an investor. You've invested your time. You've invested your resources into this program, into this player and her brand, her personal brand. And so I think when it becomes a business like it has, then all of a sudden your personal off the court, off the field mistakes, screw ups, they become everyone's business. And that's just the matter of fact as far as how the world's going to treat it. You can question whether they should or not, but it's a matter of fact. That's how the world's going to treat it if you're Angel Reese, and or if Caitlin Clark were kicked off her team, or if Carson Beck, we mentioned him earlier, if any of these people, like, they are now viewed as adults, they're not viewed as kids anymore, and they're treated as public figures, they're treated as celebrities. It's Justin Bieber. Bieber's life, for better or worse, has always been in the public eye. That's now the case for Angel Reese. That's now the case for any of these kids who are making millions of dollars playing sports.
And very often, they explicitly will say that they deserve to be supported. They deserve fandom, right?
I know your quote on this.
If you deserve the money, right? If you deserve the money via NIL, then you deserve the fandom, okay? And so then if I can't be then informed as to why you're not playing, can I withdraw my fandom? I mean, I know you think you deserve it, but if I don't know why you're not playing now, I'm not. Again, it's like, well, I feel like now I'm not entitled. I'm not the 12th man anymore, Texas A&M, right? It's not we anymore. Well, then I think you have to expect to lose a lot of interest very quickly. And again, on a theoretical basis, I'm saying.
Yeah, I also think part of the whole...
Because, Doug, I do not care about the Bayou Barbies. Did you know that was her nickname?
it's a great name, though.
On a personal level, I don't care about the Bayou Barbies GPA. Yeah, so I'm just looking at this from this kind of high-level picture in terms of building relationships with fans and what that really means, the two-sided dynamic here.
Yeah, I want to say one quick thing is that, is anyone really surprised that giving college kids millions of dollars deters them from pursuing their academics that are going to lead to a $50,000 a year entry-level job at the end of the day? Like, that becomes a very small priority when you're... Bayou Barbie brand is making you millions of dollars off of TikTok and Instagram. I think that communications degree is a lot less appealing, a lot less of a priority. And so can we blame someone like Angel Reese for perhaps acting in her own rational self-interest in terms of prioritizing the things that are making her real money and putting on the back burner something that's likely to make her a lot less money? So in the short term, at least. So yeah, I part of me is like, you know what? Like, A, we should have seen this coming. I think a lot of people did. B, Angel Reese, I don't really have a problem with what she's done. But C, when your personal life and your personal brand on social media is something that you use to make money, you can't all of a sudden say, hey, you can't be invasive and judge or be looking into my personal life and decisions when that's how you're making your living. You're an influencer. That's why they follow you. Yeah. They want to see what's going on in your life. And so when you fail, it's a reality TV show for the rest of the world. When you fail your class, that's the next episode.
Yes. It's a reality TV show at this point.
And you are a willing participant as an actor, and you're signing up for that.
You're now getting paid. Look, back in the day when you weren't getting paid, the college kids weren't getting paid a lot more sympathy for the kids. Now, right. And again, I don't know what the real NIL numbers are, but you know, maybe it is a seven-figure kind of deal. And I don't know how much. I think she's just got 1 year left at LSU.
Yeah.
And it is interesting, right? Because where are these deals going to go? But after LSU.
Yeah, that's what I would be a little concerned about if I'm on Angel Reese's team. But I mean, also, getting back to like, you're kind of willingly signing up to be a character in a reality TV show that is college sports now. I saw an ad on Instagram this week for Google, and it was featuring Bo Nix and his wife. So I grew up in Birmingham, and I have mutual friends with Bo Nix. And then I went to high school with his wife. Like, she's a couple grades below me, and I knew her and stuff. But I was like watching this Google ad, and it's like, oh, there's Izzy on this Google ad. And it's Bo Nix is saying, every day I start and I have breakfast with my wife. And then I do. It was just, they were going through their day. They were being influencers, which is great. They're making money off of that. But it's like, you have to understand, when you're Bo Nix, the entire world knows who your wife is, and they're following her career and her. She's got a bunch of followers on this. I mean, she's essentially become an influencer, is my understanding, which is great. And I would do the same thing. But, and they seem like they know what they're doing. The Nixes, they seem like they're doing a great job, and I have no critique of them. But what I'm saying about Angel Reese is she's doing the same thing. She's inviting people into her world on social media, and she's becoming a figure intentionally in that way. And so it's like, why, if you're a Kardashian, do you get upset when the tabloids are writing articles that you divorced your husband, or that whatever it is that what's going on with it? It's like, you're now a Kardashian, you're in that ballpark of, you're a public figure, and it's fair game with the media now. And because that's part of what you're getting paid for, in my eyes.
I suppose a Kardashian leans into it, right? And it's almost like Angel Reese could lean into it and start Angel Reese's tutoring services, right? Buyout. I'm making light, but you know, that's definitely, I think maybe in these NIL counseling sessions, or when the schools are talking about NIL opportunities, there probably isn't enough. They probably wave their hands at the fact that, well, you're going to become a public figure and that has some consequences. I would just say, when you become a sports public figure, essentially you're creating relationships with fans. If fans don't have a relationship with you, and it's a funny relationship, right? But if fans don't have a relationship with you, if you're not aspirational, they don't want to have eyelashes that look like yours, okay? When you become aspirational, they want to have your same eyelashes as you. You can now sell that, but guess what? Now you're interacting with the fans. And I think there's probably just almost no celebrity, I think, understands that's part of the deal, except for the Kardashians.
And like, there is, I've noticed from fan behavior, there's a lot more interest in the personal lives of these figures now that they're paid and that they're on bill. Like Brock Bowers in Georgia, you'll see him on billboards, you'll see him on your local attorney's commercial or whatever. Like, just, you see these people all the time. And like, I was watching a Georgia game with my parents this week, and somebody in the family was like, did you know Brock Bowers is dating a girl that goes to Tennessee or something? Like, they brought up his dating life. People were talking about that, and it's, I mean, everything's public. Like, you're not just a player anymore. You're not just kind of shut up and dribble. Like, you have a platform, and you're going to be followed around and viewed and critiqued in the same way that any celebrity would be. And
now, but, and again, I suppose everything's by, and I'm going to ask you a question here. You help me out here. Angel Reese has been in Sports Illustrated swimsuit. She's had some issues related to, she's gotten into like little tiffs with the White House.
I didn't know either.
I don't think Brock Bowers has done anything like that. Right.
Well, I don't either. And I don't think, like I mentioned Bo Nix earlier, and my understanding of Bo Nix has always been that he's a grade A citizen, great dude, stand up guy, and highly unlikely to, other than get himself in trouble saying, oh, we should have beat this team or that team, outside of the competitive comments, as a class act. And I fully expect someone like him, or Bowers certainly seems to have his head on his shoulders. And so a lot of these kids seem like they're mature enough to handle this. They can handle the spotlight, they can handle their critique and their personal lives in addition to, but when someone's failing school, it's and they're making even more money and they're on a bigger stage, perhaps you do question whether this is a good arrangement, honestly, for the person. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's in the best interest of a kid like Angel Reese to be in this situation.
Well,
and maybe that's unfair. Okay. Maybe it's like, I would take the money. So I would say financially, it's certainly healthy.
I have a choice, right? I mean, so we're talking about Bo Nix. What's Bo Nix? What are his draft prospects? Do you know?
I saw a mock draft this morning, and Bo Nix was going number 5 to the Giants in this mock draft. He was the future of the franchise for my team.
Okay. So, well, Tommy DeVito is the near-term future. Okay, so
Giants legend.
For Bo Nix, right, and for Angel Reese, I don't know what Bo Nix, maybe he's played his way. He always struck me as like he was probably, before the season, maybe pegged as a second or third round draft pick.
Right.
And we don't know where he's going to end up, but those commercial opportunities are going to dry up pretty quickly if you're not an NFL star, right? If you're an NFL backup, then suddenly you go from doing Google ads or making, you know, a million plus in NILSU to essentially having no endorsement potential whatsoever. And so, like, you talking about Bo Nix and his wife or fiance, what'd you say? Wife? I think
wife. Yeah.
That in some ways, again, sort of the way these leagues are organized with NIL and this captive, really enthusiastic fan bases that all of these schools have at Oregon, at LSU, at Georgia, at Alabama, you do create a situation where maybe there's more money at the college level than at the professional level for some of these athletes. And so they almost have to act towards optimizing their collegiate earnings rather than their professional earnings. And if that's the case, you're going to get these behaviors.
Exactly. And like Bo Nix is one that I viewed as someone who like probably needed to cash out in college. I think his early years, no one was pegging him as a first round pick in the NFL before he went to Oregon. And so wasn't surprised to see him come back for another year, and haven't been surprised to see him. I mean, even when he was at Auburn, he was one of the first people I saw that was getting NIL deals, very assertive and intentional about that. And for good reason. You have an opportunity. You have a platform that's limited in time, and you've got two to four years at that point left in college, and you have a platform that can potentially yield millions of dollars every year. And not only for you, but it can position other people in your life with a platform and with potentially long-term ramifications of that. And if I'm a college student, I'm very much intentional about that. I know, like at Georgia, kid Nazir Stackhouse, I think it is his first year starting for Georgia. He was one of the top followed guys on social media on the team. Like, he was putting out content regularly 3 years ago as a freshman at Georgia, and he's just now starting, but he's already got this built-in following, and I'm sure he's monetizing that. And so you're seeing strategic decisions by people like Bo Nix, people like Nazir Stackhouse. And in the case of Angel Reese, I think I don't know the details. I don't know if she flicked off her professor and got kicked out of school, or if she simply hasn't been studying very much. Let's say she hasn't been studying very much. She probably has a lot going on. She's doing video shoots. She's doing swimsuit magazine shoots. She's playing a sport. She's all over social media. She's going to the White House. She's doing, like, it's equally strategic, I think, to what Nazir Stackhouse or Bo Nix, in terms of she's prioritizing the things while she has that window to make a lot of money. And again, from an economic standpoint, acting in her own self-interest, doing the economically rational thing. And you kind of, again, without knowing the details, it's hard to judge somebody in that position.
Okay, so as you were talking, I tried to look up Bo Nix Google deal, the partnership. And I don't see any dollars mentioned in the article I found, but they do mention what it looks like Google is doing. Because in some ways, it's kind of strange. Is Bo Nix a national figure? I don't think so, right? I mean, he's probably more of a regional figure, dominant in the Pacific Northwest, the West Coast.
Pacific Northwest and Southeast.
But they also mentioned that this Notre Dame quarterback, Sam Hartman, is also going to one of this. And so part of this, what it looks like is that Google is grabbing these high-profile quarterbacks and college football players as part of their holiday shopping promotion. And that probably makes some economic sense, right? I mean, so the Notre Dame quarterback, the Bo Nix, it's actually kind of a funny year in college football in some ways in terms of like, when I'm trying to think like who the big name guys are, who is approaching being a national figure, it's kind of a short list, isn't it? But it does make some sense that you grab these guys, you grab the top SEC personalities and the top Big Ten and the top, that Michigan quarterback, what's his name, McCarthy?
Yeah.
There's some guys with some decent appeal. You collect a bunch of those, probably get them for relatively less money than the Joe Burrows and the whoever you might grab in the Patrick Mahomes. Might make some sense. And so in some ways, it's kind of an interesting approach for Google. I like it, actually. As a marketing guy, I actually like what they're doing here.
Yeah, and I personally with Google, so was Sam Hartman with Google also?
Yeah, it sounds like Google's grabbing a bunch of these guys.
Okay, it's just the guys I've seen. So, I mean, of course, Bo Nix and Sam Hartman, they both seem like high character guys, which if I'm a company like Google, they don't seem like liabilities, I guess. Someone like Caleb Williams has been, I don't know that I'd want to be associated with him as a brand. And I've seen him in a lot of marketing. And then on the flip side of that, you had like DJ Uiagalelei, who seems like a really good kid, just ended up not being a top performer and it was already inked all these deals to be a spokesperson. And so it's like the balance of someone that is dependable and is going to perform at a high level. So dependable on and off the field or court. And Angel Reese, probably some of her sponsors are probably not super excited to be associated with her right now, although it could be worse. She could be.
I'll make a cheap comment here. I don't think anyone buying those giant false eyelashes cares that she's not making.
Yeah. Well, you could imagine a situation. Imagine Jameis Winston years back. Winston, Cam Newton, any of these people who are involved in scandals of sorts being regrettable. And so I think that I've seen brands like Google seem to be a little bit more careful and picking out, probably doing a little bit of a background check on their guys in terms of their behavior off the field, because I think that can be equally important when you're representing a brand like Google.
What I like about it in terms of the marketing is if you think through what's happening, if they're doing this for the holiday season, in some ways, what they might be leveraging is what the media environment is going to be. So if you start to do these deals with all the, I don't know how well Hartman's played or if he's a Heisman candidate, but if you can essentially get all the guys that are going to be on the stage in New York as part of your campaign, you're getting all this free media as well. And they're short-term deals, right? You're not investing for years with these guys where something can go wrong. It's just like, hey, this superstar quarterback, that superstar quarterback, Notre Dame, Oregon, et cetera, et cetera. It's probably beautiful from a marketing perspective. Short term, a lot of free media ties into the Heisman Trophy. It's great.
Yeah, and for the players, like for the athletes, it's great too, because Sam Hartman or Bo Nix, for all we know, they could be second string or scout team in 3 years or even next year, for all we know. And so having an opportunity to cash out on their status while they are at the top in their region or for their fan base is key, because I've known a lot of Georgia guys who would have made millions of dollars had they had the opportunity as student athletes. And whether it's injury or whether it's simply the fact that their game doesn't translate, like it translates really well in the SEC, but not in the NFL. And 2 years out of the league, maybe made some money from that, but could have made 10 times as much while they were in college. So it's like, if I'm Bo Nix, things could not have worked out better in terms of COVID, extending your time in college, having that extra year to build your brand, but also build your draft stock. Like, things have gone extremely well for that young man. Sam Hartman transferring to Notre Dame and getting to level up his brand by connecting with one of the big brands or perceived big brands in sports. Like, there's been a number of quarterbacks that have really benefited from a prolonged stay in college football. And I think, like, number one of mine, like, no one's benefited more than Bo Nix, like I said.
Well, and I don't know how much money he made, but someone like Stetson Bennett, you know, his story playing at Georgia in essentially a major media market like Atlanta with that rabid, enormous Georgia Bulldog fan base, you suspect that he could have, and again, he came about through when NIL was in its infancy. But a guy like that might, you know, make more money. Two national championships at Georgia probably generates more revenue long term than being the backup for the Los Angeles Rams. Okay, Doug, the other one on college football. What do you think about Liberty University? And like this idea that they could very well go undefeated. You know, there's been so much conference realignment that I looked it up. They're in Conference USA. I feel like the members of Conference USA used to be kind of legit for a while, but they probably turned over three or four times. If a guy like Liberty is not eligible under any circumstances for the college football playoffs, okay, so it goes back to this theme of league organization. Then what are they actually doing? Okay, so that's question one. I'll ask you two questions. Second question is, if this is next year and we go to 12 teams, do you throw Liberty in there?
I think if there's a 12-team playoff, you've got to put in any undefeated team. I think they've got to be. I think UCF, UCF would have been in. But I'm pulling up the rankings right now, or just kind of a rough ranking to see who that would leave out. And I imagine it's going to be a two-loss ACC team or a two-loss, let's see, who's at 12? So Ole Miss, two-loss SEC team. Oklahoma, LSU's right around there with three losses, and Oregon State, Missouri, Penn State, a couple of those teams. So, I mean, that is tough. It would be tough to be Penn State and get left out. But my opinion of with undefeateds is the same in college basketball, is that they should always have a shot, because just because they haven't played anybody good doesn't mean they wouldn't beat anybody good. You don't know. With Penn State, you already know how Penn State fares against Ohio State and Michigan, because they've played them. You don't know. With Liberty, it's like, who knows? They could. And I remember there was a year where, like, Utah had a really good season, and they played Bama in a bowl game, and everyone favored Bama, even though Bama, I think, had lost some more games, but they just played better competition. And as it turned out, but Utah smoked them. Like, they were really good. They never had the opportunity to play anybody good until then. So I like seeing, there's Doug, so few undefeateds. I like seeing them in the mix.
I'm trying to the Liberty schedule to see who they played at the beginning of the year, right?
Yeah.
UAB, Akron, UMass, BYU, Connecticut, New Mexico State, Bowling Green.
Hey, New Mexico State beat Auburn this week.
Sam Houston, Middle Tennessee, Louisiana Tech. Okay, so I don't know. I mean,
a play-in game for the 12 team with the 12th team and the undefeated.
So you want to officially make this class of schools, these non-Power 5 class of schools, second-class citizens, right?
Yes. If they're in the top 12 already, but I mean, I'm looking at the top 25 and they're number 22 at 11-0. Let's see.
But hey, let's take four teams from the non-Power 5, put them in the playoffs, and let two of them in. I mean, that makes some sense to me.
I just think you got to give those teams at least the perception of a chance. I don't think they ever have a chance, whether it's against Alabama or Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, top couple programs. But I think the stakes feel so much higher if Liberty going undefeated earns them a spot and some kind of play in or even into the real dance. And even if they go get smacked by Alabama or Georgia or whoever the first week, it's like making the spotlight in that way and having that storyline. It's like going on a run in the March Madness when you might make the Final Four and get beat by 30 points by North Carolina, but everyone remembers the run that you had, and that's forever. I don't think George Mason looks back and says, man, and it's a shame, Doug, that we made it that far because we got beat so bad.
It's the only way you can move up, right? I mean, why is Gonzaga a legit team, right? Why was Butler kind of on the verge of being legit a few years ago? You got to provide that opportunity. Otherwise, these teams like JMU and Liberty, they're not actually part of the college football. They think they're part of Division I, right? But they're not actually part of it.
That's why either let them compete or create a tiered system where, you know, if they win their championship this year, they can make it up a tier into the real league with the SEC teams and the ACC and Big Ten and Pac-12 and all them. Like, well, of course, Pac-12 won't exist next year, but I like that system. Like, I like having a league structure where there is playing your way into a league like we see in soccer. I think that that's cool for a school like Liberty. Like, if this next year they were in the ACC, you know, if they go undefeated this year or something, have a chance, it's like, shoot. And if we win the league next year, we can make it into the SEC. I think that's cool, but not having a finish line, like, what bowl are they projected to play in? Because it's not going to be like, not only will they not be in the playoff, they're not going to be in a premier bowl game as an undefeated. Number 22, I would imagine that they're playing in, I was going to say like the Music City Bowl, but again, a lot of these bowl games are specific to the conference.
Googling skills are failing me at the moment.
Yeah, so they're saying, let's see, AutoZone Liberty Bowl.
That's nice. I mean, because there was the Liberty Bowl. So Liberty's going to the AutoZone Liberty Bowl?
That would be funny. that would be a really nice synergistic collab.
Yeah, we got to let the marketers have it, right?
What are they? The Liberty Flame?
Liberty versus... Okay, so I have the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl. Liberty versus James Madison. Is one of the projections
versus James Madison.
Okay, so played. Again, so what is the point to this, right?
Congrats, it's like you get to play your regular season opponent again.
You're in this division, but you're not in this division, right? So
it's bad. Okay, football, Doug, I think college football is really fun for the teams that are really truly in the mix, and the ones that really truly aren't, mm-hmm. whether it's official or not, is Illinois football in the? Do they really have a shot in the next 20 years at making a playoff?
No, look, I can explain it to you. I mean, it's Illinois fandom is fundamentally different than Georgia fandom, right? In that you guys are out there trying to win national championships. And again, look, I know enough of you guys, and I know what fans are like. I don't even think being a Georgia fan is a good thing in terms of health perspective. You're working on an ulcer. Right. I mean, you got all this anxiety. You're never happy. Whereas for Illinois, I'm totally relaxed now. I tune in. We got some convoluted strategy that if we beat Iowa and a couple other things happen, that we're going to win the Big Ten West. And then we also got this backstory about, well, we got to get to bowl eligibility. And then we're going to play in some crazy bowl game that with the branding tie-in is the most interesting part of it. And we're playing some, I don't know, lower level. We're playing TCU if they're bowl eligible, and you tune in on around New Year's Day or a couple days before, and it looks like there's 4,000 people in the stadium. But we had those extra 3 weeks of practice, and we could sell the recruits. I mean, there's all these kind of rituals to it. It's frustrating as all hell, and I think I care less than you, but it might actually be more enjoyable.
I think you're coping. I think you're coping. This. I used to do that with Alabama. I used to say, man, they seem miserable.
Time out. Were you worried going to Tennessee as a Georgia fan this weekend?
No.
Okay. I barely knew that Illinois was playing at Iowa, right? I mean, it's...
I used to say... I will say this. I've been worried about Alabama weeks out. Mm-hmm. So I was worried about injuries. And every time a player went down, we were all like, oh, no, this is going to kill us against Alabama. So there is an anxiety.
Going to the SEC championship game.
I hope so. Working on that.
Okay.
Let me know if you know anyone that knows anyone.
I might. Okay. But look, I know Georgia fans, right? And you're going to go into that game with almost this feeling of like it's exciting and you're all dressed up and you're red and black. But this feeling of dread that Saban's coming. Yeah. That Saban's coming.
It's true. It's true. It's. I mean, I'm already there. I have friends that I talk to about every day where it's like, man, like, how are we going to beat? Our pass rush doesn't look good. Their quarterback can run. Like, that's a bad matchup. Like, just finding things to be anxious about. And I think that to what I was saying earlier, as a Georgia fan, I used to look at Alabama fans and say, I don't envy them. I actually feel sorry for them because they win so many championships that any year where they don't win a championship feels like a colossal failure. And meanwhile, we're over here, and if we win the SEC East and we just have a shot at an SEC championship, it feels like the biggest year ever. So I'd much rather be in our position. It's way more fun to pull for a team like this than to pull for a team like that. And of course, as Georgia's evolved over the years, they've become more and more like Alabama. And I don't sit here and say, man, I wish we were like Tennessee where we could lose two games a year but feel like we have a shot at an SEC championship and just barely miss it on our best year, because that's kind of what Georgia football used to be. So I don't know. I think it's a form of coping, but I also think there's some truth to it, because you definitely have a lot of less anxiety about whatever game your team's playing in 2 weeks than I do.
I have no anxiety.
I will be so stressed. I will be so stressed. And at the stadium, no. I've been at games where I'm like, am I going to faint? Like, I should not be this stressed out about a couple 18-year-olds playing football against each other.
We're trading engagement for anxiety, right? You've got all the engagement in the world. It's exciting. It's arousing. These are memories that are going to last you for the rest of your life. While I don't have any worries whatsoever about whether or not Illinois beats Northwestern, except for the fact that I hate Northwestern, right? I mean, and it's a different.
Go to Northwestern, Mike.
It only matters where you go to undergrad, Doug. Grad school doesn't. It's kind of great. We have not actually got into the NFL, but we'll come back to the NFL next week. And there's a lot more college football ahead as well. At this point in the season, it's like this is the ramp up to rivalry week. So this is like we're about to turn the corner on college where. It's all about the scenarios and the championship games. And this is where drama, it's almost like this little lull before the drama really kicks in and this gets intense. And just on the heels of that, then the NFL starts to go into hyperdrive with the playoffs and that type of hunt. So a lot of good stuff ahead, but we'll wrap it here. As always, more content at fandomanalytics.com. Thank you.